This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 2nd of July, 2021. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. Our editors this week are Liz and Gordon Legg. Our readers today are Ros Lydiard.
Hello.
Claire Porter.
Hello.
And I'm the presenter, Peter Lydiard. Well, we start with their usual regular notices. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Liz Legree. Contact number is on the key fob attached to your memory stick. And as you listen to the recording, remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And those of you with computers or tablets, you can put the memory stick in the box so you can access the weekly recordings of the Chronicle. Or you can do it through the website, which is www.winchestertalkingnews.com. So let's have a look at this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle. And first of all, the headlines, which are COVID cases soar in new hotspot, online witch hunt closes post office, and council working to find new use for Debenhams.
Yes.
So can we have the first headline story, please?
Yes, yes, of course. COVID cases soar in new hotspot. A new COVID hotspot has emerged in the Winchester district. The number of cases in Oliver's Battery and Hursley has soared from 2 to 15 in the 7 days to June the 23rd, a rise of 650%. For a rolling rate of 183.5 per 100,000 people. This is the highest rolling number for any part of the Winchester district since February. In the Winchester district, to June the 23rd, there were 81 cases, up 38 or 88% for a rolling rate of 64.9. June the 23rd is the most recent day for which localised figures are available. COVID infection rates are increasing across most of the Winchester district. There are now only two parts, Springvale and Itchen Abbas, and South Wanston, Sutton Scotney and Mitchell Dever, which are marked white on the government map because there are two or fewer cases in the 7 days to June the 23rd. The Delta, also known as the Indian variant, is also rising fast. In the week to June the 23rd, there were 1,629 such cases, according to Public Health England. In Winchester, the number of Delta cases has risen from 19 in the week to June the 9th to 41 to June 16th and 67 in the week to June 23rd. It is more easily transmissible than previous strains. Of the 14 local authority areas in Hampshire, Southampton has the most cases, with 329, followed by Portsmouth, Rushmore, Test Valley, Hart, East Hampshire and Winchester. Across the 315 local authority areas of the UK, there are now 100 with a better figure than Winchester. A week ago, the equivalent figure was 65 and 52 the week before that. The Delta or Indian variant is being blamed for the increase as it is more easily transmissible than previous strains. But no deaths have been reported in the Winchester district for 118 days since March the 3rd. No deaths have been reported in the area covered by Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, and that includes the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, for 66 days. The numbers of its patients who have died remains at 439. Hampshire Hospitals is currently caring for 4 COVID patients, 2 in Basingstoke and 2 at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. The increase in cases is not being reflected in the number of patients, which could mean that the Delta variant does not make people as seriously ill as other earlier strains. Some 82.2% of adults in the district have received their first dose of vaccine, slightly below the UK average of 84.4%. For second doses, it's 62.4%, just above the national average of the 61.9%. Winchester schools are affected. There are 3 cases linked to Winchester University, the highest numbers for several months, but none of the people affected have been on the campus in the period before their positive result.
Thank you, Ros. Claire, can we have the next headline story, please?
Online witch hunt closes post office. An online witch hunt against staff is being blamed for the temporary closure of Bishop Swarthen Post Office. The post office on the town's high street was closed on Saturday and again on Monday before reopening on Tuesday. A notice on the door said staff had been placed under immense stress by abusive customers and would in future operate a zero-tolerance policy. The notice said, please note the post office and shop will be closed on Saturday 26th of June and possibly the following week. This is due to the immense stress that has been placed upon staff by a minority of customers who have taken it upon themselves to verbally abuse our staff. In addition, there appears to be an online witch hunt taking place on social media platforms against both our postmaster and staff members. This has been totally unacceptable and has been the reason for the temporary closure. We are currently reviewing our position with this matter and should like to remind our customers that we will be operating a zero-tolerance approach to such behaviour in future. We operate a CCTV system with audio recording for our staff safety. When we reopen, we will pass any or all recordings of the above behaviour to the authorities. To our pleasant and loyal customers, however, we would like to sincerely apologise for any inconvenience this has caused and look forward to seeing you in the near future. One customer, who asked not to be named, tried to use the post office on Monday afternoon and joined a group of people outside, including a postman who said he had not been informed of the closure. I went to pick up a parcel I'd specially ordered to find the shop closed. Several other very disgruntled people were milling around and someone pointed out a notice on the door. I was truly disappointed and cross, actually. Surely this situation could have been better resolved. Such a vital community service disrupted, allegedly because of a few idiots. A post office spokesman said on Tuesday, Bishop Swarthen Post Office was closed due to personal reasons. We are sorry that the postmaster has felt the need for a short-term closure of the branch. We are liaising with the branch. We apologise for any inconvenience caused by the unexpected closure. The postmaster was unavailable for comment.
Thank you, Claire. And the last headline story is headed Council working to find new use for Debenhams. Winchester civic chiefs say they will not let Debenhams become a blight on the High Street. The large High Street department store closed permanently in May, but a committee heard that the City Council is keen to bring it into some kind of use if it is not otherwise let. An indoor market on the ground floor has been widely suggested and was again raised at the Business and Housing Policy Committee. Councillor Charles Heathcliff said, "It's great to see the High Street buzzing again. It was beginning to look a bit sad a few months ago, and to see the shops reopening. There's an enormous community interest in what happens to Debenhams. It's left a big hole at the bottom of the High Street. Could the City Council be more proactive? The idea of an indoor food market could be terrific, providing flexible, affordable space for local businesses, farmers and food producers. The council could offer to pay the fit-out costs. It could be a boom for the local economy and an asset for the city." Sue Robbins, Corporate Head of Engagement, said the council's estates team was talking to the owners of Debenhams Building, Surrey County Council, and looking at proposed short-term uses to stop it being vacant. Councillor Martin Todd, portfolio holder for Economic Recovery, told the committee, "We do want to be visionary. We have no interest in Debenhams staying empty in the short or the long term, and are keen to keep the area active. We want to make sure Debenhams doesn't stand empty and become a blight on the High Street. We believe we can do much better than that." He asked if there's enough demand for an indoor market to fill a large space that is Debenhams' ground floor, and asked, "Do people want an indoor or outdoor market? Would it be better to let the outdoor market grow organically, as at the moment?" he said. Ms. Robbins told the committee that a High Street plan had been drawn up for the year 2021-22 to get footfall and shop occupancy rates back to pre-pandemic levels. "The aim is to support businesses and find innovative ways of attracting people back to the High Street after the heavy blow of the COVID pandemic. A £100,000 government grant from its Welcome Back Fund had helped with a Shop Local, Love Local campaign. One issue is that more people are working from home, so there are fewer people working in the city centre," the meeting heard. And now we proceed with the death notices, starting with Roz, please.
Alexander, Pearl Alexander, passed away peacefully on the 15th of June, aged 89 years.
Dowes, Reverend Ivor Roy Dowes, formerly of St Mary Magdalene, Winchester, passed away peacefully on the 11th of June at Ashbourne Court Nursing Home, aged 86.
Hoare, Sally Hoare, passed peacefully at Cedars Hill Care Home, Shaftesbury.
Patterson, Robert James Michael Patterson, passed away peacefully on the 18th of June, aged 80.
Powling, Derek Powling, peacefully on the 7th of May with his beloved wife Mary by his side, aged 90 years.
Smith, Shirley Diane Smith, peacefully at home on the 1st of June, 2021, aged 76.
Smith, Margaret Rose Smith, peacefully at home on the 14th of June 2021, aged 84 years.
White, Joan Patricia White, passed away peacefully on the 22nd of June 2021, aged 101 years.
Thank you, Claire. And we're going to work you hard now because we need a Christian comment from you, please.
Right. This today is written by Rosemary Baker, and she's headed it, "Get Up and Go." Do any of you remember the Pete Seeger song about his get up and go that got up and went? This seems to be a problem both for me and countless other people. How is it that some people seem to have unlimited motivation and endless energy? I could have written this article sooner, but somehow it hasn't happened until now, with the deadline approaching. I wasn't busy exercising, although I have walked the dogs regularly despite the weather. I wasn't getting ready for work or even working. I'm retired now, supposedly with time on my hands. My time wasn't spent at my calligraphy class or my book club because I don't do either. Neither was I procrastinating some miracle culinary delight because tonight's curry is already made. Quite simply, I have no excuse. I'm not alone. According to a December 2020 survey in the USA, 42% of people between 18 and 49 say they have struggled to find the motivation to work since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. So that leaves 50% who are fine. They get up and get on. Then there are those people who wake at 6 a.m. and run 10 kilometres before work. People who write their memoirs. People who wash their curtains. Really? What are their secrets? Why do some people have so much drive and others apparently so little? Is it possible for me to become a go-getter? To find out, I mustered the motivation to study some scientific papers. Well, to cut a long story short, there isn't really an easy answer. It seems to be a mixture of nature and nurture. The nurture is then a mix of diet and exercise, and the effect of reward on the dopamine system of the brain, if that helps. In the church, we have recently heard the stories, once again, of the call of the first disciples. They apparently did just get up and go. They heard Jesus' call and they went, leaving their work, their homes, and their families, so we're told. This week is the feast day of St. Peter, when many churches ordain their priests and deacons. The Methodist Church chooses this time of year as well, but because it coincides with the Methodist Conference, I haven't been able to find out if this is connected to the origins, but what has always puzzled me is how many ordained people had to struggle to be accepted for ordination. Many waiting until nudged into applying, and then those who, having offered, were at first turned down. It may be that we will find this will change. We also now have a problem with many of the retired clergy, certainly on whom the Methodist Church depends, having not just losing their get up and go, but their confidence in going to churches as well as leading worship. Workshops online are apparently part of the solution.
Thank you, Claire. Rod, could we have editorial comment, please?
Yes, it's headed, "Why the delay in tackling crisis?" The paralysis in the Winchester Diocese continues with news this week that the 6-week stepping back of the Bishop of Winchester, the Right Reverend Tim Dakin, will now go on until the end of August. So an unprecedented schism between the bishop and many of his priests is to carry on through the summer. The issue surrounds the way the bishop has managed the diocese over the last 10 years, with an emphasis on mission work, with an alleged disregard and ignorance of the need of the parishes. The bishop is seemingly being allowed more time for contemplation over his future. To put it bluntly, how much time does he need? By the end of August, this awful state of affairs will have gone on for more than 3 months. The diocese is in a state of limbo. Much diocesan business is paralysed, certainly all the important decisions. A wall of silence surrounds the issue. Thousands of churchgoers are being treated with contempt. Presumably lawyers are at work behind the scenes. But this crisis should not be allowed to continue.
Right, well, we have the opinion piece now from George Hayter, which is headed, "Most people ain't that bad. So often, they're awful. That's why I enjoy a good moan about people. Men and women in positions of power are among the worst. The inefficiency and stubborn stupidity of officialdom can drive you up the wall. People in the group can be particular irritation, such as when you're trying to have a romantic evening in a cosy restaurant and they're on the next table shouting at one another. Drivers can be difficult. Some seem to think that the M3's fast lane was constructed specially for them. I also take a dim view of people who don't laugh at my jokes or tell clever jokes, which I don't get. I do try to temper any disappointment about people, reminding myself that the world has never been a perfect place. If it was a perfect place, there would be no fattening effect of chocolate and no bunkers on golf courses. Because people would never be perfect. I urge anyone with a personality as glum as mine to try concentrating on the pleasing aspects of mankind. Liking people is easier if you examine the evidence of good that they do. Few people become thieves or murderers. Most of us in and around Winchester spend our lives lending a helping hand to family or friends, getting on with their neighbours and breaking few laws. Most people are conscientious at work. They try their best to do a good job, and that's a very happy state of affairs for society. The result of their hard work is all around us. On the whole, streetlights work. Clean water flows from the taps and the sick are tended. That's a lot to be grateful for, and more than can be said for many poorer countries. Walking round Winchester, gratitude is in order at, for example, Abbey Gardens. This public park, Biking Alfred statue, is full of smiling faces amid lawns and flowers skilfully nurtured by hard-working people. Our historic high street is lined with bountiful shops and eateries, manned by helpful staff who have to stay on their feet all day. Most of us delight in Winchester's rich inventory of ancient buildings, painstakingly maintained. Planners are accused of cramming in too much development here or strangling entrepreneurial ambition there, yet their good work is evident in a thriving Hampshire countryside that still surrounds us despite exponential demand for homes. Hampshire schools are staffed by good people working long hours to give a sound start to life to children, while the Royal Hampshire County Hospital is full of diligent souls who have put their lives at risk to serve patients. Professional carers cheerfully look after the elderly and infirm as best they can, while funding is low and recruitment is poor. I'm grateful to the brave people in the forces who stand ready to defend us, and grateful to the police for the many dangerous and harrowing duties they have to perform. We should all thank our political representatives too, although their need to attract votes can often tempt them over the line separating positive attitude from lying. Thank goodness there are people prepared to face derision and rejection by standing for election in our democracy. Perhaps I am most grateful to Britain's social workers. Their very stressful role includes trying to protect children at risk of maltreatment in their families. Social workers are blamed when a child is harmed or killed in the family home, but if they remove a child from perceived danger, they are often accused of harming the child by breaking up the family. Some of the nation's workforce goes unpaid. Many of these volunteers have little choice, such as the adults and even children who find themselves having to care for disabled parents or relatives. So much of the good that is done goes unrecognised. Too often, we only notice the bad driving and the loud restaurant customers. And now we've got letters to the editor. A mixed bag this week. Funnily enough, not nearly as many letters as we normally have. I don't know why. Anyway, the first letter is written by Stephen Perriman, and it's headed Lido in Street. Why not River Park? There is a photograph of an outdoor pool at Street in Somerset, which we enjoyed immensely when living and working in Somerset a few years ago. With the right support and management, Winchester too could have the same at River Park. Stephen Perriman, Barley Down Drive, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Oh, my letter here is headed GP Appointments, and I did wonder what I was going to be reading, and I wasn't wrong. Here we go. It is small wonder that accident and emergency services at the hospital become so busy when it is so difficult to get appointments to see one's doctor. A couple of weeks ago, I called my practice and asked to speak to my own doctor over a matter relating to recent open heart surgery. My own doctor could not accept an appointment for nearly a month, so I was offered a same-day telephone call from another doctor. The problem was efficiently dealt with. Today I called again, hoping to see my doctor about a long-term problem with my metal replacement knees that I would like to have investigated. I was told that only telephone appointments could be made, but that my own doctor had no slots available at all. I was offered a call from another doctor unknown to me, but not until the 15th of July in 17 days' time. There is now an online option, which after commencing writing this letter, I decided to try for the first time. On entering details of my problem, which seemed to involve duplicating many of my replies to questions, I have been promised a reply. I'm going to read that again. I'm very sorry. I have been promised a reply within 36 hours. I am loath to cancel my July appointment until I see the result. Vetting online queries must take up an inordinate amount of time. Fortunately, although 90 years old, I am fairly competent with the computer, and although with some difficulty, because the system often changes and can manage to order repeat prescriptions. I am not as patient as I used to be. I compare the present situation with that existing in the 40s and the 50s, when one was able to just turn up at one's doctor's surgery, which was open at the same time each day, and one would always be seen. Admittedly, sometimes after quite a wait. Home visits at any time, day or night, were the norm for anything more serious. And that was from Keith Webb, Quarry Road, St Giles Hill, Winchester. Mr Webb, postscript from yesterday. In my letter, I reported that in spite of my age, for the first time, I had made an online report to my practice about my symptoms. The system was quite laborious and took quite some time to complete. To my great surprise, about 24 hours later, I received a phone call from my own doctor, who questioned me at some length and has now arranged for an X-ray. The online system seems to work well, but how many older people who are not computer literate miss out and have to wait weeks to talk to their own doctor?
Thank you. Claire, please, the next letter.
This letter from Simon Lever is headed More Vineyards.
Ooh. Yes, please.
Sounds good. Further development and expansion of vineyards across the region from Winchester to Beachy Head is excellent news, chronicled June 24th. The fact wine has been produced in the area since Roman times is remarkable. Ironically, warmer summers have contributed to the increased success of grape growing. With only a small percentage of wine being produced in the area, the opportunity paves the way for expansion, investment and jobs. Welcome news. Currently, 1 million bottles a year is outstanding, with the forecast estimated to double during the next 3 to 5 years to 2 million bottles. A homegrown success story. Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
Thank you, Claire. The next letter is headed Safe Singing, and it's written by Sean Cameron. Sir, writing in last week's Chronicle, June 24th, Christian Comment, Pastor Nigel Henning explained why he can't wait for the day when we can sing together inside again, and he highlighted some of the social and emotional benefits that accrue from belonging to a choir. As well as many long-established church choirs, it is now estimated that there are more than 40,000 members who are involved in community choirs throughout Britain. And the COVID virus restrictions, maximum 6 people, has meant that almost all these choirs have been forced to shut down. The anxiety behind these restrictions is a view that singing may increase the spread of the virus, as opposed to talking. However, a study of aerosol generation shows that this perception of talking versus singing is not as simple as it appears. Earlier this year, a group of researchers from the University of Bristol published the aerosol results of 25 professional singers when singing, speaking and breathing. The results showed that at ordinary volume, that's 50 to 60 decibels, neither singing nor speaking were not significantly different to breathing. At the louder volume of 90 to 100 decibels, there was a difference observed when singing and speaking, but even here, the generation difference was relatively small. In short, the belief that a singing choir could be a dangerous spreader of the current virus appears to be at odds with the evidence. Certainly, any minimal risk from a choir of 50-plus singers singing at ordinary volume can be starkly contrasted with the permitted 60,000 fans at Wembley Stadium creating chants in support which are far above the 100 decibels. The reference sources that I am quoting is Gregson Florence K. A. et al., to 2021, comparing aerosol concentrations and particle size distributions generated by singing, speaking and breathing. Aerosol Science and Technology, Volume 55, Issue 6, pages 681 to 691. That was written by Sean Cameron, member of Winchester Sings Community Choir, Halls Farm Close, Week, Winchester.
Well, the next letter is headed Wonderful, and it's from Paul Hickey of Parchment Street. Sir, magical. If you go down to the cathedral today, you're sure of a big surprise. Winchester Cathedral Close, that is. I went to Cathedral Close, Winchester, today and was met with a wonderful surprise. The wonderful children of Wecor Primary School in Porchester Fareham have been so creative and have left lots of their creations just outside Winchester Cathedral by the railings to the left of the cathedral entrance. That's Chronicle, June 24th. The children of Wecor Primary School have made lots of funny three-dimensional animals, very colourful psychedelic tree trunks and lots of drawings and paintings of animals. The theme of the creations is climate change and taking care of all the animals, big and small. It is a wonderful sight to see. The children of Wecor Primary School have done so well and have been so creative. I recommend that everyone goes to see these wonderful creations. Well done, the children of Wecor Primary School. Thank you for showing your wonderful creations in Winchester. And that's from Paul Hickey, Parchment Street, Winchester.
This is headed Park Workout. I have a great concern for what is going to happen in North Wall's recreation ground. There have been complaints from residents about the wonderful youthful boot camp that has been organised in the open air. We are saying, get out there in the fresh air. Do your exercises while the sun shines. If you have to have a bit of music, what's wrong with doing that in an open field? By the way, the organisers of the boot camp pay for the privilege, and yet I know for a fact there is a resident of Hyde that has complained and taken photographs without the consent of any of the youth that were working out. How do I know this to be a fact? My granddaughter, her boyfriend, and their friends had their photographs taken without their consent. More to the point, please can we get some sense from the City Council? You ask for the youth and everyone to get out there? Where is there a better place than North Wall's Rec? What is going to happen there? One Hyde resident said in your paper last week, leave it to us. We know what should go in there. But the park is supposed to be for everyone. It's the last public open-air space that is left in the city for all the residents and visitors. Please be sensible. There seems to be double standards here. Those people in the council who have for years advocated open-air sports for youth and indeed the elderly. Here is the boot camp doing exactly that, and complaints are coming in from just two people, residents from Hyde. Would you stop this activity just for two complaints from people who don't appreciate the music they work out to, which is only on for an hour in the morning and an hour in the evening? Have we got to that point we are being dictated to by two people against the whole city of those who want to use North Walls? And that letter is from Eileen Berry, Priors Dean Road, Hairstock.
Thank you, Keir. The last letter is written by Ian Holmes and it's headed Junction 9 of the M3. Sir, the proposed scheme for alterations to Junction 9 on the M3 is driven by the fact that this particular junction is a key transport interchange where the volume of traffic has been increasing, as has the size and weight of many vehicles. Previous consultations have been held, resulting in some positive changes, and there have also been more recent changes indicating that Highways England are listening. But there is still much to concern many. The real announcement of this revised plan was made in the Chronicle on June the 3rd. To quote the Chronicle, this scheme is growing controversial, including safety fears and encouraging more traffic. The Highways England senior project manager is also quoted as saying, our plan will increase capacity, help reduce journey times and improve safety. Apparently, this will be achieved by, amongst other things, widening the current junction, building bridges and underpasses. Personally, I have no wish to encourage more traffic, as that is going to happen anyway. On return to normality, let alone the establishment of a free port on the south coast, fewer people using trains, and the reopening of Southampton Airport. Even now, it is not too late to rethink the plan, as physical work has not yet started. That said, with seemingly ever-increasing bills for particular railway lines, climate change, pollution, etc., might the bill for this scheme actually cause a delay anyway? In summary, the motorways and highways of the Winchester area need to be reviewed, and particularly because of the ever-increasing volume of heavy goods traffic, not just via Junction 9 of the M3. Thus, the aim should be to decrease that volume at that particular interchange. If places such as Salisbury, Basingstoke, Oxford and London can have a ring road, why not Winchester? Parts of it are already in place, but one suggestion might be to create a larger interchange at the current Junction 11 and swing north and east to join the A34 in the area of Three Maids Hill, oblique Bullington Cross. And that letter was written by Ian Holmes of Mortimer Close, Kingsworthy. Well, now we have Belgarum, as you probably know, gives us an alternative view of some items in the news. The first one is from Ros, please.
This is a bit sad, really, and I'm a cat lover, so it's quite hard to read. I think it has a happy ending, though. So let's go. The cat a long way from home. The mystery of cats and what they get up to. For a while, a black and white cat was a fond favourite to staff and patients at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital and Melbury Lodge in Winchester. He just appeared one day and hung around. Health workers nicknamed him Sid. Carrie Dominey takes up the story. A few weeks ago, Sid was wandering around looking very worse for wear, always hungry, more so than a well-cared-for cat, straggly coat and large ticks nestled in his fur. He was taken to a local vet's by one of the RHCH's site coordinators and was found to have a microchip and to be named Casper. The vets called the owner's number on the microchip and the owners were overjoyed, but revealed how adventurer, not Sid, really is. He went missing in January 2021 from Somerset. The family thought they had no hope of being reunited with their beloved feline companion, so were incredibly excited to hear he was safe, although shocked to hear of his nomadic adventure. Not Sid's owner has since collected him. Who knows what he's been up to for the past 6 months and how he made it all the way to Winchester, said Carrie. Thank heaven for microchips. Thanks, Belgarum. Every cat should have one.
Thank you, Ros. Claire, please.
This article is headed Supporting Football Rivals. England's football stars took on their biggest rivals, Germany, in a knockout game at Euro 2020 on Tuesday. But in Winchester, not quite everyone backed the Three Lions. That's because a small contingent of German-born nationals in the area had hoped their side could reach the quarter-finals at England's expense. Anglo-German groups in England were looking forward to the game, which they say would bring together a shared love of football and beer between nationals of the two countries. According to the 2011 census data, 919 people in Winchester were born in Germany. This means Germans made up around 8 of every 1,000 residents in the area at the last official count. Above the average of 5 in every 1,000 residents across England. In comparison, 1,762 English-born nationals live in Winchester. Richmondshire in Yorkshire has the highest rate of people born in Germany, at 21 in every 1,000. While at the other end of the scale, only 2 in every 1,000 people are German-born in Knowsley. Yet despite being severely outnumbered, German-born nationals were said to be looking forward to the encounter, drew in a huge television audience. The British-German Association a charity founded in 1951 to foster friendships between the two nations, said members were excited about the game. Speaking before the game, a spokesperson said, "The British-German Association fosters mutual understanding and friendly contacts between the UK and Germany. So we are looking forward to the England-Germany football match as a way of bringing together two great sporting countries in their shared love of football. Our members around the country are excited about watching the forthcoming game." This was echoed by members of the Bristol Anglo-German Society, which seeks to further interest in the German-speaking world.
Thank you, Claire. Now, the last Belgarum item is headed Road Sign, A Long Way From Home. Spotted in Takedown this week, a road sign partly in Welsh. The last time a Celtic language was widely used in the area would have been around 1,500 years ago, as the invading Anglo-Saxons from the south and the east pushed the native Britons out of the area and all the way westwards to Cornwall and Wales. Linda Kay of Goring Field tells Belgarum, "Welsh road signs spotted at the bottom of Takedown Meads. They'll be taking over next." Somehow, a sign would be useful in Wales, around 80 miles away, has worked its way across the country. Or perhaps the contractors know something, as Linda jokes. And I'd like to apologise for all Welsh speakers out there, because I'm going to have a try at what the road sign says. It says, "Llwybr Toed ar Gael."
Oh, well done.
Yeah, and you know what that means, don't you?
I think you're swearing, aren't you?
Oh.
Possibly. It says footpath closed.
Well, that's easy.
Now, a couple of items of interest of things going on in the district over the course of the next week or so. At the Winchester Discovery Centre in Jewry Street, Winchester, there's a retrospective exhibition of work by Raymond Briggs. It's on tour from the House of Illustration. It's the first ever exhibition dedicated to the author-illustrator behind some of the most popular and influential books that he wrote. And the second item, of course, is the Winchester Hat Fair, which has just started. It goes on until Sunday the 4th. All the days of this year's event are actually taking place at the North Walls Recreation Ground, and it will be a socially distanced and ticketed event. Now, before we move on to the general news items, I know that many of you will be excited to know that lighting up times are about 4:30 in the morning, that's dawn, and about 9:25 in the evening is dusk. You switch your lights on then. I thought you'd like to know that. Okay, moving on to general news items, starting with Ros, please.
Oh, yes, certainly. Well, I must read this because it's an article very close to my heart, and it's about the Chesil Theatre and their next production. It's headed Chesil Returns to Live Performance. A Midsummer Night's Dream, a play of magical mischief, languishing lovers, feuding fairies, and an Amdram performance is the ideal way to welcome back live performance in Winchester. The Chesil Theatre has the bonus of performing in the gardens of Wolsey Palace as the first production in the summer season. The play opens on July the 13th, after a most unusual rehearsal period. Actors have met in small groups in a field in the coldest May for decades. June brought warmer weather for director Sarah Hawkins to lead the ensemble. Such was the desire of the Chesil members to get back to the fun of working together that this is a cast of great depth. Even the cameo parts are taken by experienced actors who appeared in major roles. spokeswoman said, with fairies from the youth theatre, original music and songs by member Heather Bryant, and a backstage and support team of nearly 40, this demonstrates the strength of this long-established group. Sarah Hawkins is an experienced director of open-air productions, but admits this one has been challenging. At all times, we have followed the guidelines and pulled together to achieve what we know will be a joyous evening of laughter and happiness to a high standard, she said. The audience size will be limited and socially distanced in line with COVID-19 regulations. A Midsummer Night's Dream by William Shakespeare will run Tuesday, July the 13th to Saturday, July the 17th at 7:30 p.m. Matinee on Saturday, July the 17th at 2:30.
Thank you for that. Was Claire, please.
Man accused as mastermind behind explosive ATM raids. A Hampshire man has gone on trial accused of being the mastermind behind an organised crime group that attempted to blow up 14 ATMs across three counties. David Paddy Hughes was allegedly at the helm of the group, which roamed Hampshire at night and stole a range of cars, motorbikes, garden machinery, and even a dog. He and his crew are also said to have used crowbars, oxyacetylene gas, and petrol to blow up ATMs and steal tens of thousands of pounds in cash. They are charged with conspiring to hit 14 machines over a 7-month period between 2019 and 2020 in Mortimer, Southampton, Farnham, Brockenhurst, Eastleigh, Bournemouth, and others. The man of Street End Close, Rotherwick, had criminal pedigree and was the leading player in a gang that committed a series of audacious attacks, according to prosecutor Mark Ruffell. A trial was opened at Winchester Crown Court on June 18, but on Monday it was stopped after two jurors were told they needed to self-isolate. The jury has been discharged and a new trial is scheduled for February the 14th, 2022. Hughes has been remanded into custody. Opening the case, Mr. Ruffell told the jury, "What I am about to describe to you, for some of you will be astonishing, a real eye-opener. For others, it will confirm your worst fears about the world that we live in. The reason why is that it is all about organised crime here in Hampshire. It is all about how Paddy Hughes is a central player in organised crime in Hampshire." The prosecutor went on to say that his OCG, Organised Crime Group, has tentacles and connections which cover Hampshire, Surrey and Berkshire. His network of criminal contacts allegedly allows him to quickly find suitors to the goods he and his co-conspirators are said to have stolen. Mr. Ruffell added that Hughes did not answer any questions in police interview and has not provided a defence statement, but is putting us to proof. What it means is that we have not the first inkling of what innocent explanation he is going to come up with for all the evidence that you are about to hear about. You might think that if he was innocent and he thought that we had made a huge mistake from start to finish about his involvement, then he would have protested his innocence at the police station or through his lawyers in a defence statement, and said why we were wrong. Instead, just silence. The jury were told about one incident when a Land Rover Defender was stolen from a business park in Fareham in April 2019. The Crown say that police followed a tracker fitted to the vehicle and found it parked at Winchfield Station near a van insured by Hughes. Police searched the van and found one of the quad bikes, impounded it, and on the same day, insurance of the van was removed. Mr. Ruffle continued, CCTV was obtained from the car park at Winchfield Station. It shows the driver of the van that was insured to Paddy Hughes and containing stolen items got into a white car. Hughes denies conspiracy to cause an explosion, conspiracy to burgle, and two counts of conspiracy to steal.
Thank you, Claire. The next item follows up actually on a letter that I read earlier, because it's about Junction 9 plans. And it says here, Junction 9 plans could benefit the city. Many of Winchester's roads could see a reduction in traffic and pollution once the major redevelopment of M3 Junction 9 is completed, according to Highways Chiefs. Highways England has predicted that there is the possibility of a decrease in traffic on city centre roads of between 1 and 25% if the scheme to transform the Bottleneck Junction is approved. But not all roads will benefit from the project, as Eastern Lane could experience an increase in motorists of more than 25%. The predictions were aired during online webinars hosted by the project team as the public consultation continues into the proposed changes until July the 8th. Phil Branchflower, a senior associate at Stantec, part of the project team, said, "The prediction of vehicle movements is still being undertaken, which once completed will be used to inform our ongoing air quality assessment work. However, current estimates have identified that predicted changes in traffic flows on the M3 and the A34 are anticipated to be small, less than 5% of existing levels. Within Winchester City Centre, we predict that many roads will benefit from a decrease in traffic flows. It is acknowledged that some roads may experience an increase in traffic flows, for example, Eastern Lane. There is anticipated to be an increase in traffic flows of over 25%. As a result, we predict the changes will result in both increase and decrease in concentrations of air pollutant in receptor locations." Jenny Murphy, Principal Environmental Planner with Stantec, said the scheme could result in varying levels of impact on local air quality, but more assessment works are needed to provide a definitive answer. He asked, "At this stage, we don't think that any air quality impacts to any ecological sites or species would be of what is known as significant. Work is also being carried out into measures to protect habitats and species present at Junction 9 and the surrounding roads, which is deemed to be a very sensitive area ecologically." Mr. Murphy said, "The River Itchen is designated as a special area of conservation and also a site of special scientific interest. It also locally is a very important and we would be doing whatever we can to protect it from pollution during both construction and operation of the scheme. We have been undertaking survey work on the site since 2016, which gives us a good understanding of what species and habitats exist. During construction, activities such as the removal of vegetation, potential piling and noisy machinery could result in impacts to the local habitats and of species. However, we would be using measures to construct the scheme as sensitively as possible."
I have another item here which follows the question of theatre and its involvement in COVID. So I'll read this. It's theatre unaffected by PM's announcement. Winchester Theatre's current plans and activities remain unaffected following the Prime Minister's announcement that the lifting of the final COVID restrictions had been delayed until July the 19th. Play to the Crowd, which oversees the Theatre Royal and Hat Fair, took a decision earlier in the year to keep the venue's auditorium socially distant until mid-August. It believes that will reassure people and build confidence in audiences to return to live performances in a safe and secure environment. Hat Fair will go ahead as planned between Friday to Saturday, July the 2nd to the 4th, complying with current COVID restrictions. To make this year's festival To make this year's festival COVID secure for everyone, all 3 days of the event will take place at North Wars Recreation Ground and the adjacent Winchester School of Art. The car park, that is, and for the first time in 47-year-old event will be ticketed. This will allow a limit on audience numbers and to prevent people coming into close contact.
Festival forced to call time over pandemic. After 8 years and 7 sell-out festivals, organisers of a popular Winchester event have called time. Wine Festival Winchester has announced that it will no longer take place, having raised £16,000 for good causes and seen thousands of wines enjoyed. The organisers have cited ongoing pandemic restrictions, continued uncertainty surrounding live events, and a lack of a regular venue for the decision. Festival director Claire Quigley Ward said, "It's incredibly sad to have to say goodbye to the festival, but we are proud to have created one of the very best events of its kind. We're going out on a high with fun memories of an amazing event. We want to celebrate all the many positives from the festival, as well as say a huge thank you to everyone who has attended and supported over the years." Organisers have said that mounting costs and administrative burdens due to COVID, including insurance and public health protocols, were further factors. The festival's long-standing venue, Winchester Cathedral, Winchester Guildhall, have transitioned to host HM Law Courts, severely restricting the building's capacity to host external events. Co-hosts of the event, Susie Barry and Peter Richards, both masters of wine as well as local residents, sounded a positive note. Susie said, "It's been an amazing adventure. We never realised what this initial idea for a fun wine festival would grow into. It's become like an extended family of thousands of people celebrating everything that's good about wine. We'll miss it and everyone involved with it." Peter added, "We'd love to say a massive thank you to our festival team. It's been a privilege to work with such a talented, enthusiastic, brilliant bunch. From day one, this was a local team effort, and we're so proud of what we've achieved together." In response to the COVID-19 lockdown, while many other events were cancelled or postponed, in November 2020, the team launched Wine Festival Online. The event was hailed as a success, attracting record numbers of participants from all around the world, but the organisers said the online model was not sustainable long term.
Thank you, Claire. This next item is headed MP delivers on his promise to charity. Just a few weeks back, Steve Bryan MP visited Trinity Winchester and he promised to get a member of the Cabinet to come and see the new Bradbury View. He recently delivered on that promise as Community Secretary Robert Jenrick dropped by to meet the team and see the facilities at the City Centre charity. The charity, which supports vulnerable and homeless people, now has residents in its £1.5 million accommodation project under one roof at Trinity, and the Minister wanted to meet some of them. Mr. Jenrick said he was really impressed with the new facilities and pledged to work with the trustees and Steve Bryan to access new funds to help drive their ongoing work. He said, "We're committed to ending rough sleeping and building on the achievements of everyone in." The project combines the existing purpose-built day centre with new residential accommodation to create a therapeutic community. It will provide individualised wraparound support based on housing first principles to help people who have been rough sleeping or for some time to turn their lives around. Trinity has said it worked closely with Winchester City Council's housing teams to ensure that priority is given to people most in need. Peter North from Trinity, Peter North from Trinity added, "We were delighted to welcome Robert Jenrick to Trinity to explain our services and show him the newly completed Under One Roof project. We are really proud of the scheme, which has completed to record time and with highly sustainable construction during the pandemic. The Secretary of State was very impressed and impressed too with the project, and he met some of the newly established residents. The scheme will make a real difference to the lives and prospects of people who have suffered long-term homelessness."
This next item concerns the bishop's future, and indeed that is what it headed. Uncertainty still surrounds the future of the Bishop of Winchester 6 weeks after he stepped back following a rebellion in his diocese. The future of the Right Reverend Tim Dakin had expected to have been resolved by now after around 20 church people told him that they would table a vote of no confidence in his leadership at the diocesan synod. There have been long issues over this management style and direction, the direction he wants to move the diocese. But the Bishop of Southampton, the Right Reverend Debbie Selin, said on Tuesday discussions were ongoing and no decision was now due before the end of August. She said, "I realise many of you feel you have not heard enough since I wrote to you almost 6 weeks ago to inform you that Bishop Tim would be stepping back. Again, I am conscious that many questions remain unanswered, but I can confirm that the process to consider matters raised concerning leadership and governance is progressing. Facilitating conversations are continuing, and in order for them to be given the time and space they need, Bishop Tim has agreed that this will be his sole focus until the end of August. I recognise that many will want to know more and have questions, but as we do need to ensure the progress is held confidential at this stage. Once we can say more, then of course we will. The Bishop of London and the Bishop of Lambeth are being fully aware of the ongoing process, although they are not part of the conversations. Bishop David has agreed to continue standing back from ministry in Winchester Diocese to enable conversations to run their course. The vis refers to the Bishop of Basingstoke, the former vicar of Christ Church in Winchester. David Williams has stepped down at the same time as Bishop Tim.
Thank you, Rose Claire.
House prices dropped in Winchester. Well, it all sounds very confusing, but here we go. House prices dropped by 2.5% in Winchester in April, new figures show. This was more than the average for the South East. But the drop does not reverse the longer-term trend, which has seen property prices in the area achieve 3.1% annual growth. The average Winchester house price in April was £431,534, land registry figures show, a 2.5% decrease on March. Over the month, the picture was similar to that across the southeast, whereas prices decreased 2.3%, and Winchester underperformed compared to the 1.9% drop for the UK as a whole. Over the last year, the average sale price of property in Winchester rose by £13,000, putting the area 62nd among the southeast 70 local authorities for annual growth. The best annual growth in the region was in Hastings, where property prices increased on average by 14.6% to £245,000. At the other end of the scale, properties in West Oxfordshire lost 3.2% of their value, giving an average price of £319,000. Winners and losers, owners of terraced houses, fared worst in the Winchester in April. They dropped 2.7% in price to £362,979 on average. But over the last year, prices rose by 3.4%. Among other types of property, detached down 2.5% monthly, up 3.4% annually, £704,000 average. Semi-detached down 2.3% monthly, up 3.7% annually, £427,322 average. Flats down 2.5% monthly, up 0.4% annually, £228,922 average. First steps on the property ladder. First-time buyers in Winchester spent an average of £325,800 on their property, £8,800 more than a year ago, and £27,600 more than in April 2016. By comparison, former owner-occupiers paid £493,500 on average in April, 51.5% more than first-time buyers. How do property prices in Winchester compare? Buyers paid 26.4% more than the average price in the southeast, £341,000, in April for a property in Winchester. Across the southeast, property prices are high compared to those across the UK, where the average cost £251,000. The most expensive properties in the southeast were in Elmbridge, £648,000 on average, and 1.5 times as much as in Winchester. Elmbridge properties cost three times as much as homes in Southampton, 218,000 on average, at the other end of the scale. The highest property prices across the UK were in Kensington and Chelsea, where the average April sale price of £1.1 million could buy 11 properties in East Ayrshire, average £105,000.
Well, thank you, Claire, for battling through that avalanche of statistics.
Quite extraordinary.
Yes, which the Hampshire Chronicle seems to delight in presenting to us, but quite difficult to read, so well done.
Yes.
The next item does have no statistics in it at all. Aha. It's headed, Sushi Serving Unit Could Be Set for City. Plans have been put forward for a new takeaway serving sushi in a vacant Winchester city centre shop. Yang Wang of Eats Trading Limited has applied to convert 151A High Street into a takeaway serving traditional Japanese cuisine. The unit was previously a gift shop called Reflex, and more recently a cobbler's, which closed soon after lockdown last year. The Chronicle understands that an agreement has been reached with the annual rent of £22,000. The proposal seeks to change the use of the shop from A1 retail unit to A5 cold food takeaway. The application to Winchester City Council states Eats Sushi would utilise a currently available unit to provide a popular and high-quality takeaway service with limited impact on the building and conservation area, as well as nearby users. All food ingredients are sashimi-grade seafood with fresh vegetables and all others pre-cooked with no food cooking from scratch undertaken. Most food provided in cool food with heating undertaken only by microwave and domestic-style rice cooker or steamer. We would suggest that Winchester High Street is an appropriate location for the proposed use, with a number of hot and cold food takeaway outlets in the nearby area, with the use providing further vitality and viability of what is a very small commercial space. The application added, it is hoped the local authority will be able to support this proposal to enhance the area, bring a unit vacant for 12 months back into commercial use and create further vitality in the town centre and that the COVID pandemic ends. It is not known how many jobs will be created if the plan goes ahead. To view the application, search on the council's planning website.
The next one is a nice positive headline. The show will go on, thanks to fundraiser. The show will go on. Blue Apple Theatre's interpretation of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein will be performed by adults with learning disability, thanks to a hugely successful fundraising campaign. It is set to run at the Theatre Royal Winchester and will also be digitally streamed between July the 8th and 10th. Artistic director Richard Conlon and his son Barney each walked 100 kilometres to raise funds to stage the summer show. The money was boosted by matching the support from Winchester City Council's small grant scheme. In total, 4,758.79. I'm going to read that to you again. We're good at this. Is it £4,758.74 was raised with potential for an additional £680 in gift aid. This means that the production is on solid footing with a total of 5,439 to go towards lighting, costumes, makeup, technical support and skills direction, and possibly will leave enough remain to go towards future productions. Richard Conlon said, "This is great. Now we can really focus on making the production the best summer show possible. We're also relieved that the delay to lockdown easing will not affect Frankenstein's live performance at the Theatre Royal Winchester, as it is fully COVID secure with the Society of London Theatre and UK Theatre's safety mark. We also have a streaming option available to vulnerable audience members, so the production will be totally unaffected by recent announcements. Blue Apple's production of Frankenstein also has financial support from the Keats Shelley Memorial Association, the Edward Gosling Foundation and the Douglas Arter Foundation. A retelling of the classic tale will be told by a cast with live experience of the themes of alienation, otherness and prejudice. Founded in 2005 and based in Winchester, Blue Apple is a theatrical company that supports performers with learning disabilities to develop and present high-quality productions for the widest possible audiences. The increased in accordance gained through stage performance has helped Blue Apple participants to enhance their social, personal and artistic skills and also achieve public recognition for their talents.
Thank you, Rose. I wish this was on CCTV. She was doing lots of theatrical gestures through that, as is her wont.
And as it deserves.
Claire, please.
Police again prevent illegal pony racing. There were no arrests, seizures or dispersals in the Mitteldever area last weekend, police have confirmed. Hampshire Constabulary had a significant presence on the A33 between Basingstoke and Winchester this weekend after receiving intelligence that illegal horse and trap racing was planned. The same road was closed for several hours last month after police struggled to deal with the gathering, with hundreds of members of the travelling community taking part. Dozens of officers were present along the road last weekend for the second week in a row. Across June 19th and 20th, two carts used in horse and trap racing were seized and three people dispersed using a county-wide order. Officers also cracked down on unrelated driving offences, including one drug driver, three drink drivers, one motorist dealt with for drug offences, and five uninsured drivers. One man wanted by police for failing to appear at court was also dealt with. But last weekend, June 26th and 7th, police made no arrests, seized no equipment and moved no people on after a county-wide dispersal order. Officers from forces in Kent, Sussex and Surrey were called in after local police received intelligence that more racing was planned. Hampshire's Police and Crime Commissioner, Donna Jones, tweeted on Sunday, "A massive thank you to Hampshire Police for a hugely successful operation this weekend, preventing pony trap racing and keeping the A33 open and horses, residents and businesses safe." Speaking on Monday, she said, "A huge thank you and well done to Hampshire Constabulary for the successful operation at the weekend on the A33. This is a key A road in the centre of Hampshire and the illegal activities last month from the GRT community, which saw them close the road for pony trap racing and illegal gambling, affecting thousands of people who live in the area. A follow-up event was planned for this weekend, and as a consequence, Hampshire Constabulary took appropriate and necessary measures to keep the road open and the public safe."
Thank you, Claire. So we come to our last news item in this recording, which is headed "New Campaign to Restore Gateway for Cultural Use." Campaigners are pressing for a historic Gateway to be given a new lease of life. Hyde Gate is one of only two remaining structures of Hyde Abbey, the medieval monastery where King Alfred the Great was reburied. It is now best noted as a pigeon roost, a place for drug dealing and a public urinal. But members of Hyde 900 want to revamp the Grade 1 listed building and turn it into a cultural centre. Hyde 900 founder Edward Fennell last Thursday lobbied the town forum, which had heard that action is to be taken to deter the pigeons. He said the poor state of the gateway sent a message that no one cared. For example, the floor surface is badly broken and dangerous, so why not dump refuse on it and then chalk up your drug deals on the walls? It was in response to these problems that in 2019 I developed a charter for Hyde Gate. This attracted quite a lot of support locally, which I shared with our councillors. But frankly, I did not continue with the campaign because I had given up hope that the City Council then would take the matter seriously. I'm delighted that you are now doing so. However, doing the bare minimum of dealing with the pigeons is not enough. What is required is a long-term strategy for a proper undertaking, care and development of the Hyde Abbey site and the Hyde Gateway in particular. Hyde Abbey Precinct is a site of national historic significance, but honestly, you would not think so if you were to walk through the site today. Mr. Fennell said Hyde Gate is a gateway to telling the story of Alfred the Great. My view has always been that King Alfred ought to be in Winchester as Shakespeare is to Stratford-on-Avon. And there can be no better place to start telling that story than in the Hyde Gate area, just 30 yards away from where his bones and those of his family lie, admittedly scattered and shattered, under Hyde Abbey Gardens. He suggested new technology-based displays and interpretations could be installed and the building used as a variety of small-scale events and exhibitions. Rosie Burns, another member of the Hyde 900, said of the forum, "Our primary objective is to get Highgate brought back to a living building, a living reminder of Hyde Abbey. Ideas include a cafe, installing large glass doors to form a usable space." Mr. Burns proposed structural development to build on the remaining associated walls of what used to be the Almoner's Hall, the now the Hyde Gate Common Room. This could provide a community exhibition space and cafe, which he said could improve the facilities of the nearby sheltered housing. Graham Todd, City Council Corporate Property Surveyor, said steps were being made to pigeon-proof the structure. Spikes had not worked, so the council was looking at a low voltage system which would make it uncomfortable for the birds to perch. Councillors at the town forum were excited at the Hyde 900 ideas. Well, that is all we have for you this week. Before we go, just a reminder that Liz de Grace is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording, and contact number again is on the key fob attached to your memory stick. A big thank you to all our support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, to our editors, that's Gordon and Liz Legg, and of course, many thanks to our two delightful readers. That is Roz.
Thank you.
Claire.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye now. Goodbye.
And from me, Peter, goodbye until the next time. Don't forget to put the memory stick back in the wallet when you finish with it. Also put the return label inside and return it to us as quickly as possible. Thank you and goodbye.